So the din of kavura. So there's much. I guess what got me started on this is the myth, and really is the myth of the tattooed exclusion. Right? There is a myth out there. I actually found out about this when I met somebody who had a child who went to the Marines, and he warned that kid, the U.S. Marines, and he warned the kid, you know, before you go, you better not get a tattoo because it's going to be, you know, heck to pay, and you're not going to get into it. And that was the first I heard about it, and that was pretty much the few minutes that I believed him until I realized that there's really no source for it at all. But my plan is to cover what is the mitzvah of burial, what needs a burial. That's it. I changed the title a little bit to who, what, could, should be buried in a Jewish cemetery. So a couple of things about the whats. The whats are pretty relevant. And then a couple of things about the whos. And that should, and a few examples and a few stories to share. So here we go. There is a mitzvah. Or it's unclear. Well, the Gemara doesn't explicitly mention it as a mitzvah, but we understand it to be a mitzvah. That the Gemara tells us, "Yigadami am Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai remez l'kfura mina Torah minayin." Where do we see a hint of kfura in the Torah? I mean, where do we see the Torah give a hint to that idea? So Tamal Omar kikavar tikvrenu. It says that you would have to bury that person. Who would you be burying? Who is it talking about? It's talking about somebody with a dalad misa space, and that's who it's referring to. So he's you're going to have to bury. So there we see it. There's an idea of burial from the Torah. So then it tells this like story. I'm really Shavur Malka, the Rav Kama. Who's Shavur Malka? So it's one of the like kings in the area. One of the non-Jewish kings that seems to take an interest. He pops up in the Gemara every 100 daf or so. You see Shavur Malka, and he asks, "By the way, I was wondering, Kfur Min HaTorah Minayin?" You know. So he responds by saying, "Oh, I was just thinking about that." Rav Cham responds, "Oh, we happen to be up to that daf in Sanhedrin. We'll insert you." So Ishtik v'lo Amar Lei v'lo Midias. He was quiet. He didn't answer him. Right? So Amar Lei Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Imsar Alma Bidei Titipshai. He said, "You're passing us over as like not knowledgeable." So the Bay Lei Lameimar Ki Kavor. Why didn't you tell him that pasuk? So he responded by saying, "Diliyavid le aron," because that really he couldn't theory make an aron. He couldn't theory do that. So tikberenu, he says, but it doesn't just say make an aron. It says tikberenu. It says and bury him. So he says lo mashmale. He wouldn't have gotten that, which is a little bit unclear. I mean, what does it mean? He's telling Kohen to a non-Jew, and he's giving him drushas in the Torah, right? So he's kind of implying he wouldn't have understood that. He wouldn't have understood that idea. And I guess that's a problem that we like see today. You know, like we kind of have to sometimes explain difficult concepts. Well, show it to me. Well, you know, it's a little hard for people that are not in the loop to get there. There is a story in the book, The Making of a Gadol, where this fellow, Yuvarov, I believe his name is, the Russian minister of education that was put in charge of reforming all the yeshivas with the maskilim push in that we have to reform all the yeshivas, the yeshivas will teach secular studies and everybody would fit in and everything, you know, and everyone would stop persecuting the Jews and everything would be wonderful in Russia. And they put this fellow, Yuvarov, was the one that was put in charge. And it tells the story, he was not very well liked in the yeshivas, but it tells the story that he showed up, and I forget who it was, tried teaching him Gemara. I mean, he asked, "Can you please teach me? Like, tell me what this whole Gemara thing is that you're spending all day learning. And they tried teaching him a sugya, and he just didn't get it. And like that was the story that was told all the Yeshivas. See, the non-Jews, they just don't get it. They just don't get it. All right. So, anyways, so here's the Shurmach. He wasn't going to understand it, and goes and tells the story, and then so the Gemara says, "I v'neima mi ekvor tzaddiki." So he says, "I, but see that we buried all the tzaddikim." So he say, "I'm in Hagabah, maybe that's just what we do. It doesn't mean that it's an obligation." Then he asked me, "The Kavri HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, I, but Hashem, it says buried Moshe." Nah, the lowly story of minhag. Hashem didn't want to change the minhag. I mean, that's what everyone's doing. So Hashem didn't want to, change, rock the boat. So Tashma, it says the following story. The Saftu Lo Kol Yisrael the Kavruo So. So it says, they gave a hesped, this I guess is for one of the malach, I guess Shlomo. They gave him a hesped, they buried him. Also, they don't want to change the minhag. Lo yispedu v'lo yikru lidman al pnei adama yiyu. Right? It says, and there's a pasuk in Yirmiyah that these people are going to be so bad, they're not going to get a hesped, they're not going to be buried appropriately. It says, that's just a change in the minhag. It doesn't mean, there's no proof that you're getting from that actually is the obligation, that actually is what is required. But we do have it. I mean, that's just what was told to Shavur Malka. But the pasuk tells us what it is. That we have an idea of burial, and that is the mitzvah. So there were actually some rishonim that said maybe it's only a minhag, maybe it's not necessarily a mitzvah, but the Rambam doesn't cost
that. What is the minhag?
No, that it's not actually required, that it's not actually that it's not actually something that the person could actually reject. That the person could say, "I don't want to be buried." That would actually be allowed. So the Rambam doesn't pass in there. The Rambam says a hesped kofen amesu, that a hesped is an honor of the dead. Therefore, the person who passed away or based in could force the descendants to actually fork up some money in order to pay for an appropriate funeral. However, the yisiva shel yispedu ain't sof tenoso. Says, however, if the person who died left a commandment, I don't want anyone to give a hesped for me, I don't want anyone to give a eulogy for me, we would actually listen to him, with a few exceptions, yes?
Where do you learn from that requirement for a hesped that includes birth?
Well, that's the next line. Patience. The next line, yes. But there is an exception to the rule of people that will say we don't want a hesped and we're gonna reject it. They may know who that exception is. Gedolim. If someone who's the Rav Ha'ir and he says I don't want a hesped, the city could say it's not up to you. We deserve a hesped. That's there are some stories over the years. I think it's the Behuda had some maisa like this. That he said, "I don't want one." I'm actually, maybe it wasn't him though. I don't want one, and they said, "Afal Tikain, we're going to do it for you anyways." Not he was dead already, but whatever. And the Rambam then goes on and says, the person says, "I don't want to be buried," so we don't listen to him. Shakfur mitzvah shenemar ki kavur tikra. No, because it's a mitzvah. That's the Rambam passing to the Shulchan Aruch passing. That's how we pass, and that's actually a mitzvah to bury the person. Okay. Now there are some before we get to actual burial of people. So we'll work our way up and start by burial of body parts, right? So what is the obligation of burial of body parts? So that doesn't sound like it's
This pasuk has to go on. The entire subject matter is someone's stoned or something.
And no, that's where the pasuk is coming from. The Gemara learns from there that he's not the only person.
But it's interesting that they take this little.
Yes. That's the first halacha we learn now from people that are miso's based, and there'll be another halacha as well that you learn now from people that are miso's based. And that's the paradigm that we have in the Torah of burying people. So
what about Sarah? Abraham.
So it's also minhaga, not necessarily. It says that he buried her. Sham kavru.
And also Rachel. And Rachel.
Okay. All right. So we would have given the same answer. We said, okay, that was the minhag. That's what Avram chose to do. It doesn't mean that's the mitzvah. Okay, so there is the Shach writes as follows. So it talks about what about the if there are other body parts that are around when a person passes away. So he writes, but my real kasuv the miyatsu menu as in lataro, so ki adam yistalik bimenu ach yikurun bimabushav. So it quotes some kind of minhag that if there is blood that comes out from the person when he dies, so you don't actually remove it, but you bury him like that. The box says, "Veneer dahainu dafuk kishmeis b'mavusham." He says, "Only if he died in his clothing." But v'nafal v'lo meis miyad el achar kamayamim shekfar pashat mavushav. He says, however, let's say that's if he died in his clothing. Meaning, we're going to see that it's talking about somebody who was killed, that he died in some tragic way, right? So he will be buried in his clothing, and that is actually the minhag today, although. It doesn't happen that much, at least in this country. But near the high adoption, so that's only if he died in his clothing. But if he fell and he didn't die, and they took off his clothing, and then he died many days later. So after he took off the clothing, so then we don't bury him like that. But we bury him. We do a tara and we clean him off. Like most people, right? We clean them off. You know, if nobody here has to tell me if they're Chevron Kedisha people, but you know, if the person dies in a regular way, so often there is some amount of bleeding or sores or things like that, but the person will be cleaned off. He says, but if a person was killed by a non-Jew, even if the person had already, even when they found him, the blood he'd already stopped bleeding. We bury him actually wearing the clothing he was wearing. If a person was murdered, or a person certainly, if a person died al kiddush Hashem, so we bury them like that. We bury them with the clothing. We bury them in a way so they appear in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that will be an extra amount of rachman. We'll call for an extra amount of all those kinds of things.
I saw they have an open casket in Israel when that happens. Someone was killed by an Arab. They showed his face at least.
Okay, I don't know.
So the first one is that he had blood on his clothes.
Right, if he
wanted to bury the blood.
Right, so that's the idea that dam chayim is the thing that one would need to, or the dam that caused the blood of life, that caused him to die. Right, so that needs to be buried, but. I mean, he has to be buried as he died. And the way he died, that's how you need to bury him. So the blood that comes out that caused him to die would be included in that. But if it was already a couple days later and you cleaned him off already, so then, okay. So that's halacha A. I forgot to number all the sources. Sorry about that. Okay, halacha B. And this is also, this comes up. It came up with I got this, Shaila. About a person who has something that is amputated. So what's the status of a body part? So there is a Gemara that discusses that seems to talk about it. There's a Gemara in Maseches Ksuvos. What's it talking about in Maseches Ksuvos? It's talking about assumptions of where people might be, where people might not be, where can I walk without having the fear of Tumah V'Tahara. And it says as follows. It says, Ela'ir ha'smuch le'beis ha'kfaros ku le'beis ha'kfaros azli. It says, if you have a cemetery right outside the city, so you can assume that nobody is buried in the city, because you would assume that anybody who died, you would take them out, and there wouldn't be any emergencies or anything like that. You would put them in the cemetery. So Amar Rabbi Chanina, mitoch shanashim kovros sham niflehem umochish kin lezorehem. I'm sorry, that was a question. I took it a little bit out of context. The Gemara asked the question: why do we have to be nervous in the city? Right? Why do we have to be nervous in the city? Everybody who died should have been taken out of the city. So who could possibly be buried in the city that we would have a fear of Tumah V'Tahara, that we have a fear of Kohanim coming? That was the question of the Gemara. So Rabbi Chanina responds by saying, no, there are things that happen in the city. A, mitoch shanashim kovros sham niflehem. Right? Number one is that the woman will bury stillborn children in the city. Okay, that's halacha A. And the second halacha is, umochi shchin lezroseihem. Right, and mochi shkin, meaning lepers, right? They will bury their bones there. Okay, and then it goes on and says a few other things. Hilchot tumas v'aris Yisrael. Okay, fine. So
why would women bury a stillborn child necessarily in the city, not in the cemetery?
Good question. Hold that thought. Hold on. Yeah, hold that thought for three sources. Okay. So what about this? You know, we could do it right now. Let's go.
I'm change the flow of your.
We have either one. You know, either change the flow of my thought or the flow on the sheet. So the first we'll discuss the limbs. So the Piskei Tshuvos writes that he quotes from the Shus Yaakov. The Noda Behuda also has a tshuva like this, where he writes that somebody asks, "What about if somebody had to have an amputation? Do we have to bury that Aver or not?" So he responded by saying the Aftivishas Ksuvos even. So what do we see from this Gemara? So one might think of this Gemara. What is the audience it seem? It seems like you do, right? It seems like that was what people do. They buried them. So the Shvus Yaakov, that's Shinbei's Vav Yud, is Shvus Yaakov. Those of you who has the same thing. He quotes that Gemara and says, nah, that even though that Gemara sounds like you bury, Yishlomer Ein Zem Yitzarachi of Likpor, maybe they didn't bury them because they had to bury them, right? Maybe Mishum Sakana. Right? Efshar de'enu mechuyiv likvor, that maybe they just had to get rid of them because of a danger, the danger perhaps of Kohen coming, I mean, they have to be put away someplace, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there's an obligation specifically to bury them in a way of kohanim, but you have to put them to the side and make sure that Kohanim never go there. That's the opinion of the Shvus Yaakov. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, and he says that that thinking is Tamua Ma'od, is very wondrous. He says, he quotes that tshuva of the Shvus Yaakov, and he says, Aval Lefi Ani Es Daisi, that's Lamed Ayin Dal, in my humble opinion, Tamua Ma'od, that sounds very mysterious. Right, the im ein tzarach kfur mitzad mitzvahs kfur lama tzarach kra. Right, if you don't need a mitzvah, if you don't really need to bury, why did Rabbi Yehuda need a pasuk? What's he talking about? So Rabbi Yehuda, quote Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara Maseches Nazir, where it discusses tumas kohanim. So it discusses, well, what about can a father? Can a kohen who's related to the person who died or the person who lost the limb, can that Kohen come in contact with that? Meaning, can a Kohen, who in theory would bury their parent, right? A Kohen would bury their sibling, would bury their child, right? Would they also be allowed to become Tameh, right? A Kohen's not normally allowed to come in contact with the dead. So would he be allowed to come in contact with a body part? Now, the body part is Tameh. The body part does cause Tumah. Right, so would he be able to come in contact with that? That's what the Gemara wants to know. And the Gemara responds by saying no, and it proves it from a pasuk. So Moshe Feinstein says, if there is no obligation to bury, why would the Kohen have anything to do with the body part in the first place? Because it must be that he's not allowed to bury. Now, the truth is, we give a whole, obviously, many shirim on Tumas Kohanim, and perhaps there is a way to answer that proof based on another idea having to do with Kohanim flying over cemeteries and things like that. But we'll leave the answer of Moshe. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein's proof, and he says the kemish din krua chayv likvor eish l'chayv likvor gam baser min achayv l'chein horis. Right, and he says therefore, just as you have to bury, you would also have to bury flesh. You also have to bury organs and things like that. So those kinds of questions come up. Rav Moshe has a different tshuva that he seems to go against this, but so limbs we try to bury, and you know, many of the funeral homes will take care of it for you. Those kinds of things happen. In the organs, we don't really do it. It's more just the limbs that we're mocking on. Yeah?
So
what
Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying is that the Kohen, because it's not one of the seven, he doesn't have an obligation. So
it's one of the seven. It's his father.
It's his father.
But and he proves from the Gemara proves from a pasuk that he doesn't do it.
Doesn't.
Right. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, why would if there would be no obligation to bury, why would a Kohen have to come in contact in the first place? I mean, what was the original thought, right? There's no obligation to bury, so of course the Kohen shouldn't come in contact with it. Right? So it must be that there is an obligation to bury, but it's not going to be incumbent on the child, but rather you'd find somebody else who's not a Kohen to do
it.
And where would you bury a limb?
So they take care of it. In a lot of, in Jewish cemeteries, they'll have a section.
Do they have a funeral for them?
No.
They just, doesn't come?
No, whatever. So no one won't have a whole cemetery.
They'll bury it.
So the Magen Avraham writes, so what about the Nephilim? What about the stillborn children? And that becomes complicated, because at what point is it considered a stillborn child, right? For other shirim, but at what point? So we assume it's when it has the tzuras ha'adam, when it actually looks looks like a person. So it doesn't need to be buried at all. So he quotes the Magen Avraham, and it's interesting. Magen Avraham is an Or Chaim. Or Chaim deals with the laws of daily things and holidays and things like that. And what's it doing there? So there's a discussion about if a person dies on the second day of Yontif. So you choose, and technically, if everything, the world was running, everyone was communities were organized, things like that. So technically, the Gemara says you're allowed to bury the person on the second day of Yom Kippur. We don't, at least in mainstream Orthodox communities today, we don't do it. In some Hasidic communities, we do. But technically, that's the halacha on the books. That's what the Gemara says. Yes?
I actually was at someone's house, and he died on the second day of Yom Kippur in Washington Heights, and he was buried in New Jersey on the second
in Washington Heights. The Breuers took care of it.
Yeah, I mean, it was, but I'm talking like 40 years ago, maybe. Uh-huh.
35, 40 years ago. Uh-huh. I mean, Rosh Feinstein says there's two things have changed. Number one is that, you know, we don't really have organized communities and just it's going to become a mess. And the second thing he says is today we have refrigeration. So it's not the problems that existed then don't exist anymore. So I knew there are Hasidish kahilas that still do it today. I didn't realize Breuers did that.
Right.
She said they brought him to New Jersey, so that they're traveling also.
Yeah.
That's permitted.
Yeah. He's covered on me. So, yeah. That seems to be the din of the Gemara. So the Magen Avraham quotes somebody who says that you wouldn't. He quotes the Gos Maimon. He says that there's no mitzvah to bury Nephilim. Why? Based on the Gemara and Pesachim, really you could learn it from that Gemara as well, that discusses they just throw the Nephilim into like the well. And the Gemara has a discussion about Kohen going to the well, whatever. That's the Gemara's discussion. He says, well, what's going on here? Why are they throwing them in the well? Don't they have to bury them? So you see that you don't have to bury Nephilim. That's what the Haggadah Maimonides says. The Magen Avraham says, with all due respect, that's what they were doing. That's what you call it. You call that burial. So that's a machlokas about whether we bury Nephilim. I believe our custom as well is to do that. We also have a custom of giving kabrisas of doing so, whatever. But also, we don't want to get too morose here. All right.
Sorry, child under the age of 30 days. Also.
Probably under the age of 30 days. There is... there is a discussion today. The Gemara, the reason why under 30 days is because we assume that if it's under 30 days, then it's a ben chas, it's an 8-month thing, and therefore it was never meant to live anyway. So the Gemara, so today we have a discussion. Well, we know that that's not the case, that maybe the halacha should, not the halacha should change, but the reality has changed. That's a whole discussion, but not for now. Okay. So, and moving on, so that's the what should be buried. Now we want to move on to the who should be buried. So this is where I said the other halacha that we learn out from from Misos Basedin. So it says as follows: a Mishnah Maseches Sanhedrin that tells us that these people that were that the Haruge Basedin, the people that were killed by Basedin, so we don't bury them in the Kvarim of their forefathers. Rather, there were two different cemeteries. One was for the Naharim Ulnachnakim. One was for the people who were executed, naragin, you know, by the sword, or nechnakim by choking. And one, there is a different cemetery for those that were stoned and for those that got sreifa. Why were these two? So those are considered to be two different levels of aveiros. Everybody knows that skeel and sreifa is the worst way of death, and everybody knows that the other two are the not as bad ways of death. So the idea is that you want to keep people within their own types, as we'll see shortly. So that's what the Gemara tells us. The Gemara says, Lo ayu kovrim, that's the next source, the penultimate source on the page. It says, V'chol kach lama, why did you need all these cemeteries? Because you ain't kovrim rasha eitzel tzaddik, because we have an idea that you don't bury rishayim by tzaddikim. Dama rabbi acha, bar chanina, minay, she ain't kovrim rasha eitzel tzaddik, shenei amar, and it's an interesting proof, vahim kovrim ish v'nei ro es ha-gedud, vayishulchiu es ha-ish bekever elisha, vayiga ish that they're walking through the cemetery. They had this guy that they needed to bury, and they saw someone was coming, I think, and they quickly threw him into this open thing, which happened to be the kever of Elisha. So Elisha wasn't so happy. Elisha had been dead for a while, but Elisha wasn't so happy about having this Russia in his kever, so he booted him out. And the guy, it sounds like the guy was alive for a little bit, and then that's a whole discussion. Did he come back to life? Did he really come back to life? Was he alive for sure? But whatever it is. But the Gemara brings it as a proof that you see that you don't bury your Shayim and Tzadikim next to each other. So as Rav Shechter once pointed out, this is where the minhag of having the Kever Kedisha comes from. They kind of organize this. Besides that, it's also where the minhag comes from of like different communities buying their own different burial plots, because you can't, like, we're not, it's obviously not practical for us to really figure out well, who's really on the same level as who? But he said, you figure that all the people from Eretz Yisrael have sinned the same amount, and all the people from from that OU have sinned the same amount. And, the different communities probably are all in the same ballpark. So that's where the minhag comes from, of different communities having their own different places. So Rav, the Chassam Sofer has the following interesting tshuva, that there is a Gemara. I actually learned this with the students in my shir 2 days ago. But there is a Gemara that even though Beis Din doesn't necessarily kill everybody who violates halachos, right? The Gemara tells us that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, God keeps a cheshbon. Right? If a person is chayev skila, if a person is whatever he did, he's chayev to be stoned and thrown off a cliff, right? So a Kadosh Baruch Hu will see to it that he falls off a cliff, you know, that something happens to him, right? Or if a person was a murderer, therefore is chayev to hereg, so we'll see to it that a guy climbs up a ladder on top of him and collapse upon him, and right? I should make sure that those things happen. So Chassam Sofer was asked, well, what about if you have a person that fell off a cliff? Should we assume that was a murderer? Right? Should we assume that? Well, he's a murderer. Beis Din couldn't kill him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of him. So we should put him in a separate cemetery away from everybody else. That is the shayla that they asked the Chassam Sofer. So Chassam Sofer said, no, that's not exactly what the Gemara means. The Gemara means that anybody who was a murderer or anybody who's high of the death penalty will get that death penalty. It doesn't mean that anybody who dies in that way was high of the death. It doesn't mean, right? It doesn't work both ways. It only works one way. So we don't assume. And then he goes on to say that, and the reality is that everybody is sinning, and you know, if we kicked out from the cemetery all the people that have sinned over the course of their lifetime, we wouldn't have very populated cemeteries.
Yeah,
right?
Well, we have a lot of cemeteries.
We have a lot of separate cemeteries, right? So for practicality, this doesn't really play that much of a role. There's one exception, as we'll see, where the Poskim actually do speak about not burying a person in a Jewish cemetery, but anybody, regardless of how they're sinning, would find a spot, and therefore this was Rabbi Gelman, my chaver in Chicago, who was related to Alan. So he gave a shir right following the Boston bombing, the whole controversy where they couldn't find a place to bury him. So I didn't hear the shir, I saw his source sheet, but I assume his conclusion was that ultimately we would find a burial place for him, right? to say, oh, we're not letting you in at all anywhere, right? So I don't believe that really fits in with our values, with one possible exception, which is next on the list. Look at that. Cremations. So there, the poskim do talk about barring the person from a Jewish cemetery. That is discussed by various poskim. There's three approaches. Number one is not allow them in. Number two is bury the person in a separate area, which does exist out there. And third is to just bury them. So the Sefer Melamed Lehoel, which is Rav David Hoffman, is one of the people that writes on this. He says, there's no real din that I could really point to and say that this person shouldn't be buried. Yes, it's true, it's a sin, and a person shouldn't be buried. We're not discussing why, but let's just assume that cremation is we're not big fans of cremation, so it shouldn't have been done. But okay, so many things shouldn't be done over the course of people's lives, and yet we still bury them in. It says, however, the second line is, Amnam Nira de la Migdar Milsa Yesh Lasor. He says, as a Migdar Milsa, which is as a Gedder, as a fence, right? We should prohibit it. The vada inatir afar hasruf lik for beisak faros harbi itself lisuf eskufa. But we would allow it to be buried anyways, so many more people would do it, because they would think that it's permissible. So perhaps it makes sense for this one specifically to put up a wall and literally and say no, we're not letting you in. But there's no real halacha specifically, other than that the Rabbanim have seen it, and I think that's really the common practice today, that we don't really let cremation people in to put up a fence and say it's not this is not something that we allow in. I did have a shayla.
I'm struggling with the context of where would this question come? If the person died and they're cremated, are there rulings on this because the person requests it?
Yeah.
The family requests it, or all the above.
Whatever, yeah. All the above. I want to be buried in a Jewish cemetery, but it's a lot less expensive. So, you know. I'll do this. How about this, Rabbi? I'll do this deal, right?
Okay.
So that's where we put the fence. I have personally had the Shiloh over my long rabbinic career, where a person was not in a way forcibly cremated. I mean, that person didn't realize what they were signing themselves off on, and they died, and the person who had control of their remains went ahead and did a cremation against the will of an Orthodox relative. And then the Orthodox relative won the remains back, but they won a shoebox.
Oh,
right? So they were given a shoebox. So I called up, and so the person asked me, would I do a funeral for that person? It was now 11 months after the person had died. So I called Rav Schechter. This was straight to the big guy. So I called up Rav Schechter, and it was made without batting an eyelash. I was just like, my joy had been without batting an eyelash. He said, yeah, the Shiloh happened all the time in Nazi Germany. And there are poskim that write about that. They used to just take people off the street, and they would send the remains back to the family 3 weeks later, and they were just burned remains. And they asked, and the poskim paskin there, that if the person was buried and was against their will, they didn't really have an inclination to do so, so you should bury them with a regular funeral. So yeah, go ahead. So I said, like, you realize I'm going to be burying a shoebox? Yeah. So then I asked, by the way, I said, well, if that's the case, do I have to do the funeral, like, tomorrow? Like, you know, I mean, it's a mace mitzvah, like, I have to, like, really do this right now. And he felt no, because technically speaking, there might not be a tea of kvura once it's ash. I mean, once it's dried and once it's whatever, it might not have the same type of tea of kvura, so he didn't think that it was something that was that much of an emergency, but wasn't it had to be done. So
that would be the only kind of condition where the circumstances were such that this all happened against the will of anybody.
Correct. There's also a discussion, could have gotten its own little title here, but there is a discussion about people that do suicide, that people that commit suicide. When I was in Phoenix, there actually was, over the course of a year, four of the top donors in the community, really, like the four top donors in the community, one had a heart attack, one committed suicide, one was under indictment for fraud, and one was murdered in 1 year. I had a member of my shul who knew this person who committed suicide, was a business person, but it was during the time of the bubble bursting, of the real estate bubble bursting. This person was in that business. This person was so angry. The landlord of the shul, he was so angry about it. He told me that when he grew up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and there's actually a Pesach Kron story about this fellow. Not this story, but a different story about this fellow. He grew up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and he said he still supports it. There's a Reform shul in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and this fellow still supports it. And he said he remembers going as a young boy to the cemetery, and he saw there was a gravestone that was crooked, that was slanted, that was out of place. And he asked his father, what's going on? And the father told him that that person committed suicide, and we don't do that. And that's to remind everybody that we don't do it.
Mm. So what's the halakha for someone who committed suicide?
Hopefully. So that's what we're about to see. Is that al pi din or not? So there is a din. There certainly is a din in Shulchan Aruch, and you know, ha'ma'abid asma midas, that the person who committed suicide, we don't do anything with him. We don't sit on Bailus, we don't give him a hesped, we don't tear kri, we don't do anything. Right? It's a way of protesting, right? You're not going to get any notoriety from this. Now, Bizman Hazeh, I see around here is a Gilya Marsha, that's a Shlomo Eger, that's where Kiva Eger is, his son or grandson, I think son. It says Shlomo Eger is Rav Kiva Eger's son. So the one that I didn't put on here, he writes that a lot of times as manazeh, we'll do it because we assume, like, if a person jumps off a bridge, so we assume that by the time he hits the ground, he had charata.
There was a famous gentleman who was involved with some kind of scandal with a banana, and it happened like 30 years ago, he jumped off a building. all the guys from YU were there. He said, who's a big donor?
Right.
Yeah.
However, there was I remember when I was in Riverdale, there was somebody who committed suicide, and they had made a funeral for him. And I remember him pointing out, like, you know, there has to be a limit. I mean, the Gemara, the din in Shulchan Aruch should have some standing. I mean, you can't. It should. I mean, it's fine. We'll do a set, but to totally write it off, say, oh well, whatever. The halacha doesn't exist. The halacha at least still exists as some kind of protest.
Yeah, isn't it true though that generally some reason is found for the person committing suicide? He really didn't commit suicide.
Right. But what we're pointing out is that the halacha has to mean something. I mean, we can't just erase the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, right? So we could say, well, it doesn't apply in this case, it doesn't apply in that case, it doesn't apply in the other case, but the spirit of the halacha should still stand. I mean, there should be some amount of protest that's put up. But so here he writes, so I know it's a little hard to read, it came out actually better than I thought it would. It says, it's on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. It says, this is blown up about four times, so, So, V'yarchiku l'kavro yoser Shmona Amos Mikevri Yisrael Kasher. He says, but what you should do is you should bury them at least 8 Amos from a Kasher grave. I mean, you should exclude them from the cemetery. So here you have a source for keeping them outside of the regular cemetery. There should be some amount of protest. We only have a few minutes left, really very few minutes left. So there is a tshuva of the Sridi Eshir, which is where he discusses intermarried couples. If a woman wasn't Jewish and married a Jewish man, so can the woman be buried in the Jewish cemetery with her husband? So Sridi Eshir says, absolutely not. This woman's caused a disaster. She's caused people to not be buried. Anyway, you're going to let her in the Jewish cemetery? So they say, well, what about if the husband says, well, if she's not going to be buried in the Jewish cemetery, I'm not going to be buried in the Jewish cemetery either? And Sridi Eshir pretty much says, good riddance. He says, okay.
Married the other way around?
What do you mean?
Specifically said
non-Jewish. No, I think it would be both. It would be both. The person's not Jewish, they're not Jewish. The one exception is, and this is really is relevant for other cases, and I would say this is necessarily the exception, but there is a Minchas Elazar, the Munkacher Rebbe, has the following wild tshuva, where it's not even talking about this topic, it's talking about a different topic. It's talking about some fellow shows up it was talking about an intermarried fellow, and he wants his wife, and he has a kid that died, and he thought, this fellow is under the impression that his kid was Jewish, because he thought that the boys follow the father and girls follow the mother. Right? And lo and behold, it doesn't work that way. So he finds that at this point. So Minchas Elazar has, like, Kedar Kavah Kodesh has about an 8-page tshuva, where this is about 1/30th of it, discussing this idea. And in the middle of it, he brings up the following case. He says there's various stages to conversion. Right? For a man, right? He has a bris, and then he goes to the mikvah. So the Minchas Elazar says, what about if he has his bris, and by the way, when he has his bris, that's with a basin, and he kind of accepts the mitzvahs at that point. He says, what happens if he has his bris, and then on his way to the mikvah, he gets to a car accident and he dies? So would we allow that person in the Jewish cemetery? So the Minchas Elazar says, we would. Because he's already kind of tachas kanpei hashkina. He's kind of one of us already, even though he's not technically Jewish. So that, okay, I can't imagine that happening too often. But this becomes extremely relevant in the following case. It's a massive, massive chiddush. But one of the big problems, especially the out of town rabbis have, you know, is candidates for conversion. So technically, you're not allowed to invite a non-Jew for a meal on Yontif. That's the law. You're not allowed to have them over at all over Yontif. And that's a big problem. Person in the middle of converting. They're not going to go to a Seder, they're not going to go, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you work that out? There's a lot of different ways of attempting to work that out. None of them are that great. But I remember I called Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, who's from Chicago, and he said, oh yeah, someone told me I should call him. He says, yeah, there's a Minchas Elazar that talks about a person who's on their way to conversion and allows them to be buried in a non-Jewish cemetery. So the same way that person is considered one of us, so to a person who's on the way to conversion for the purpose of burial, they can also be considered one of us for the purposes of meals on Yontif. Mm-hmm. So that is a chiddush agavi chiddush agavi chiddush agavi chiddush. That is a massive interesting idea, right? Because Minchas Elazar A was talking about this case least in a hypothetical fashion.
You can't invite him.
So he was saying you could. He thought you could based on this. The person was on their way. But realize the Mithras Chin, Elazar wasn't actually passing on this case. He was like kind of suggesting it as a hypothetical, right? That person already actually had a bris. This person, you know, most people don't have the bris. It happens the same day, right? And he's talking about a burial in a cemetery. This is talking about meals on Yom Tov. It's not exactly the same thing, but lo and behold, he says it. So certainly, Yishal mi lismo in that area. So, okay,
that's a good evening.
So,